Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Well, back when I was a kid, I did not know of anyone, not a single person, who had a peanut allergy. Zero. Anthony, what about you?
Yeah, I have to say the same thing. I mean, I can't be sure, but I certainly don't recall it. It wasn't nearly as common. It didn't seem to be.
Exactly. And I mean, we're both parents now, of course. And so things are considerably different there now than they were when we were younger.
Very, very different. About 2% of American children are allergic to peanuts. And while that may not sound like a lot, the number has more than quadrupled since 1997.
And quadrupled. It is staggering when you think about it, which is why a new study in the New England Journal of Medicine, published just last week, suggests that some peanut allergies might be prevented if parents introduce infants to foods containing peanuts instead of avoiding those foods.
Now, in a moment, we'll talk with a pediatric allergist about what the new research says. But we wanted to start with why it matters so much.
And it matters because, as many families know, living with extreme food allergies is very hard. Erin Brazil is with us in the studio. She lives in Boston, and her 4-year-old son has a severe peanut allergy. Erin, welcome to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I was wondering if you could just briefly describe to us the moment when you realized your son was going to have to deal with a serious, potentially lifelong allergy.
I think I wasn't very aware of peanut allergies at the time, but in retrospect, the very first example would have been when I had eaten a peanut butter sandwich when he was about 5 months old. And shortly after, maybe about an hour to 2 hours later, he was at his teething phase, and he was kind of chewing on my chin, and I was kissing his face, and he's developed a really bad rash. And I suspected at that time. It wasn't confirmed until he was about 8 months old, which was prompted by another allergy, a dairy allergy that he has.
And so since that moment, Erin, what challenges have you been up against since then?
He's contact reactive, which means that he can't touch a surface containing a peanut protein. Mm. It's difficult with that type of I think that a lot of children are with peanut allergies have contact reactivity. You can't go to a playground. You can't go to a birthday party. I can't really let him out of my sight. There's peanut protein everywhere.
So just to be clear about what that means. So in other words, if someone has held a peanut and touched a piece of equipment at a playground and your son comes along and touches that, he responds?
Yeah, he will react immediately. He develops a rash. We don't generally, because of how many times he's had reactions, he's had anaphylaxis 9 times. He's been hospitalized 7 times out of those times.
So he's been in the hospital 7 times and he's 4 years old now.
Yeah, he's been hit with the EpiPen 9 times because of the anaphylaxis. But he's had to stay in the hospital 7 times. They weren't able to get his vitals and his breathing back.
Right.
So he stayed there. The other 2 times, he was monitored for about 6 hours.
So, I mean, the long and the short of it, it's like every aspect of his life, your life, is dominated by this disconcern.
Yeah, every single reaction he's never eaten peanut butter. He's only touched things. There was one instance where he touched the elevator button. We live on the 3rd floor. By the time we got up to the 3rd floor, he was in full-blown anaphylaxis. And I think younger children are prone to put their hands in their mouth or touch their eyes, so it gets into their bloodstream in some way, and he reacts to it. And it's a very, very quick, scary situation. Yeah. So we just stay away from playgrounds or birthday parties, movie theaters, typical stuff that kids do every day.
It's going to be tough for a 4-year-old. But Erin, hang in here for just a second, because we wanted to start with you in order to talk more about this new research, because even though your son showed signs of having peanut allergies early on, he wouldn't actually have been included in this new study that we're going to talk specifically more about, the one that's been published in the New England Journal of Medicine. But your experiences and your son's experiences are obviously very relevant, because you and your family, I guess, are among the many parents and children who frequently do end up in the ER with their children because of just a trace of peanut protein that ends up on a desk or a toy or an elevator button. And as we were saying earlier, 4 times as many children have a peanut allergy now as did in 1997. So listeners, I want to ask you, we're going to get into some of the most research on peanut allergies in just a second, but we want to know if this is part of your world, if you've seen an a dramatic growth in the number of children around you who have peanut allergies, and what advice you were given by your doctor on how to deal with it, or when to introduce peanuts or peanut proteins, and also what you think about the fact that some of that advice may have been wrong. Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Now, again, we're joined by Erin Brazil. She has a 4-year-old son who's severely allergic to peanuts and other foods. And we're joined now by Dr. Wayne Schreffler. He's director of the Food Allergy Center at the Massachusetts General Hospital. And he says that advice that parents of children who are at high risk of forming food allergies, that those children should avoid peanuts until they're the age of 3 or older, well, that advice may have been exactly wrong. Dr. Schreffler, welcome to you.
Thank you, Magna. Good to be here.
So this research that appeared in the New England Journal of Medicine has received worldwide attention, really. Can you just briefly walk us through why, you know, as we said, some of the advice that parents may have received in years past about peanut introduction, why we're beginning to think that that advice may have been wrong?
Sure. And, you know, I think I should probably start by clarifying that we've had, you know, inkling that that advice, which was current when I was coming out of training around 2000, you know, that we should avoid, you know, we should encourage kids to avoid peanuts and tree nuts and shellfish and other highly allergenic things in early life, was already, you know, rolling back. And in fact, by 2008, the recommendation was no longer that those things be avoided. And yet, I think it has taken even more time for that message to sort of permeate, you know, the larger community and society. And also partly because the evidence has been really of an epidemiologic nature. And so this paper is so big and really, I think, deservedly is regarded as a landmark study because it was a randomized trial
right. That
really addressed this very important question about whether those kids should be avoiding or not.
So let's talk a little more specifically about exactly what the research revealed. So the group of physicians or doctors, scientists, looked at kids who had been identified as being of high risk of potentially forming peanut allergy. Is that correct?
Right. So the research, which was led by Gideon Lack and George Dutois in London, really very carefully selected infants that were at very high risk for developing peanut allergy. And they did so by picking out kids who either already had a diagnosed egg allergy and or had severe eczema. But they also excluded anyone who had strong evidence of peanut allergy already formed. So for example, you know, Ms. Brazil's child may have been excluded already if, you know, he was already demonstrating or she reactivity, you know, even from mom's breast milk.
Right.
And in that group, indeed, they were successful at picking out a high-risk group because in the kids who were followed without any intervention, 17% of them by the time they were 5 had a confirmed peanut allergy.
Right. But the ones that, so they separated these kids into 2 groups. One of the groups, they didn't actually introduce any peanut protein. And then the other group, they did over a certain period of time in infancy. And you said that the group that didn't get any peanuts still had a 17% prevalence of allergies at the age of 5. What about those kids who did get introduced peanuts?
Right. And so that was what was so remarkable. So in the group that was instructed to consume peanut at least 2 grams 3 times a week, so about 6 grams, and to give you some context, a peanut kernel is about 300 to 400 milligrams. So this was, you know, several peanuts worth. 3% of them at age 5 had peanut allergy.
3%.
Right.
So significantly smaller number.
Yeah, a huge effect. And that's, of course, also why the paper has attracted so much attention, because it's not as though that this is a, you know, a small effect. This is really a very significant reduction in developing peanut allergy by 5.
So, Dr. Schreffler, then, could you just sort of summarize for us briefly what this means for parents, that, like, should their approach to introducing peanuts or peanut protein in infancy change then?
Right. That is the question. And for, you know, I think families at home, and as you can imagine, lots of calls we're getting and from our patients, et cetera, that is exactly what they want to know and need to know. And I think it's going to take some time probably to reform recommendations. But, I mean, I think there are a few takeaways immediately. One is that, you know, if you're in a high-risk group, if your child is in a high-risk group, don't just add peanut at home to your infant, because about 10% of the kids that fit into that high-risk group did have strong evidence of already being allergic, and so there would be, you know, risk associated with that. Secondly, it really was a high-risk group. So if your child is in, you know, the general population, so to speak, I think that by extension, it probably makes sense to introduce peanut earlier, and that's sort of what the recommendations have been since about 2008, that there's no reason to avoid these foods early in life.
Yeah, can I jump in here for just a second?
Recommendations.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying about that there hasn't been a recommendation really to aggressively avoid foods, but I don't think the American Academy of Pediatrics has been clear about maybe you that you should be introducing. Like, an absence of recommendation isn't necessarily a recommendation to do something.
I agree, and I agree. It's sort of a wishy-washy recommendation, and so for those, but to get to that message of the kids at home for the moment, you know, I think that if you're in that normal risk population, you probably would say, well, let's go ahead and add this. But I don't think that you need to, you know, sort of seek out extra medical testing probably. Mm. I think that you're at low risk and, you know, the first introduction probably done cautiously is a good way to go.
Right.
And for that high risk, I think that, you know, we need to be more proactive about identifying whether or not they have evidence for allergy and trying to actively get peanut into the diet, because that's the group that is likely to benefit the most.
Listeners, I'm speaking with Dr. Wayne Schreffler. He's the director of the Food Allergy Center at Massachusetts General Hospital, and we're talking about the latest research on children and peanut allergies and how a new study shows that possibly early introduction to peanuts or peanut protein might help prevent peanut allergies forming later in some children. I'm also here joined by Erin Brazil. She's with us in the studio. She's a Boston food allergy activist, and her son is severely allergic to peanuts and other foods. So if you're someone who's familiar with peanut allergies, or you or your children have it, what do you think about this new research? What do you think about the notion that earlier introduction to peanuts might have prevented allergies in some kids? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Erin, can I just quickly get your reaction to this research? I mean, it seems to be quite a change from what people have thought for a generation about how to deal with peanuts in children.
I feel that all research is great for this situation, for the epidemic that we have going on. I think it's certainly a step in the right direction, but there's definitely a lot to work out and more that we need to know about this. I think that it's a little bit misleading to the general. It makes me concerned to the general population of parents who are not aware and educated in food allergies. What does high risk mean? And I don't think the average parent knows what that is and how to identify. I wouldn't have been able to identify whether or not my son was high risk.
Well, can you just hold that thought? Because I think that's a really important point.
Sure.
So, Dr. Schreffler, how would a parent identify their child as high risk?
Yeah, that's a great point. So these study investigators, they used diagnosis of egg allergy already and severe eczema. I think it's fair to say that, you know, having a sibling with food allergy has been identified as a risk factor. Not as much as a parent, really the sibling is a stronger risk. And it's unclear that egg allergy is so much different, let's say, than early milk allergy. So I think if, you know, a child has other confirmed milk allergy, sibling with allergy, severe eczema, and severe eczema really means, you know, persisting even despite normal treatment for eczema, which mm-hmm. is a very common problem, that's really, you know, a high-risk population that's most likely to benefit, and also, paradoxically, most likely to already be allergic and should, you know, kind of have some evaluation before just trying it.
Right. If you can both just hang in there for just a second, we've got callers who want to join us, and I want to get them in this conversation. So let's go to the phones. Danielle is calling from Watertown. You're on the air, Danielle.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
What's your thought?
I was calling with a question for the doctor. I have a 10-month-old, and we've introduced peanuts already because she's low risk for an allergy, and I had read a little that maybe some of the research was wrong about later introduction of peanuts. But I had also read that in Israel there's a very low rate of peanut allergies because they tend to give infants sort of like we give pups these little puffy treats that are coated with peanut powder. And I was wondering if that's anything the doctor knew about and if if he has any sense of that, you know, something that might be influencing the lower rates of peanut
right.
allergies in other countries.
Well, Danielle, you actually happened to hit upon a part of this issue that's at the center of this story. So, Dr. Schreffler, will you let Danielle know the answer to her question?
Yeah, absolutely. So, in fact, Danielle, this makes for a fantastic kind of story, because it was that observation that Israeli kids had very low rates of peanut allergy, despite being otherwise, you know, comparably allergic to other, you know, parts of the world. And in fact, some food allergies like sesame allergy being quite common, high rates of asthma, allergic rhinitis, eczema, very similar to other parts of the world. But that even, for example, Orthodox Jewish communities living in London had high rates of peanut allergy, the Orthodox communities that were importing this peanut snack, just as you recall, had low rates, but kids with similar background that weren't eating that early in life had high rates. So that it was that observation and the snack called Bamba that, you know, surely we should be importing all over the world now. This must be great for the company. You know, that was that observation that led to the hypothesis that underlied this study and led to this finding.
Right. Well, Dr. Schreffler, let me ask you, there's something we've sort of been dancing around a little. I just want to attack it head on. Is it possible that the vagueness of previous recommendations led parents to believe, many parents to believe, that introducing peanuts to their children at an early age would be dangerous, and therefore that is one of the things that contributed to this massive spike, this quadrupling of peanut allergies that we've seen in kids since 1997?
Yes, it's absolutely possible that that contributed. I mean, we've seen rising rates of allergic disease across the board. So, you know, for several decades, increases in allergy, allergic rhinitis, or also called hay fever, eczema, and other diseases that we sometimes associate with modern lifestyle. And those changes have been fairly rapid in the scheme of things and so point to environment changes and are probably, you know, big scale changes in the way we're exposed to microbes, et cetera. But then in the last 10 years, there have been suggestions, although the epidemiology around the true prevalence of food allergy is tough to nail down, there have been suggestions that food allergy has increased perhaps even a little bit faster. And for that, I think we have to consider that, you know, this advice of early avoidance was probably, you know, the wrong thing. And here, in the case of peanut at least, you know, very strong evidence to that point. I think most people think that this is likely to be generalizable to other foods. And the epidemiology that led to, you know, dropping the recommendation of avoidance is not just about peanut, but about several major allergens, yeah. You know, most of which points toward early oral exposure, I should say, being associated with less likely allergy later. I think we probably got it wrong, Magna. I'm not trying to dance around that. And, you know, but what we need, right, is studies like this that give us a good evidence base.
And Dr. Schreffler, I'm not trying to put you on the spot here because I know that you and your colleagues and everyone in the world of immunology does the best that they can with the evidence and data at hand. But I imagine that there are some parents hearing this who have been dealing with, you know, peanut allergies in particular in their children for quite some time now who might just be gobsmacked and thinking, if all I had perhaps all I had to do was just give my kids some peanut protein earlier and we wouldn't have to be in the situation that we are in now. I mean, what do you say to them?
Well, one thing to point out, you know, this population, for example, this high-risk population, you know, if you look at the outcomes, that 3% that despite having regular peanut exposure still end up with peanut allergy, that really points to the fact that there are larger forces at play, right? I mean, that's still a rate that is above the general population. So there are, you know, aspects of this that, you know, are certainly out of anyone's control, and I think that, you know, that can be really frustrating when anything like that, you know, we feel like we ought to be able to intervene and change it. It's frustrating for providers, believe me, as well as I think parents. But this is also more than just kind of adding peanut to the diet, you know, and it's still, in fact, it's one of the questions that remains. What is the sweet spot in terms of early timing and how much is really necessary to get this big benefit? This is a lot of peanut that these kids were consuming. This is right. More than most, you know, U.S. kids at that age. And in fact, it's not even, you know, clear, you know, we don't want kids to go out and eat peanuts and risk choking on them. And even peanut butter is pretty thick. It's not really a very appropriate infant food.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I don't know. I think we might be overreading into it if we think, oh, if only, you know, I'd kind of introduced peanut kind of more like maybe we did when we were kids, that we would have gone from, we would have, you know, decimated the peanut allergy prevalence. I don't think that's the case.
Well, let me bring Aaron Brazil back in here. I mean, you're living with this every day with your son. So, I mean, do you find hope in this new study, or do you still feel a certain measure of caution when thinking about, you know, all the other parents out there who have to make these decisions every day on, you know, when to introduce and when not to?
I certainly still feel a certain measure of caution. I think that there's a lot to learn when you're not a part of the food allergy community already, and ways of identifying signs of a reaction and signs of anaphylaxis, and how do parents even know all of the signs. It's not just your child is turning blue and not breathing. There are many, many symptoms of anaphylaxis, and unless parents are really educated in how to expose their children. I think that it, even still, for my son, he was exposed and he reacted. I think that it's not necessary. It's a good step, but it's not getting to the root of the issue. And I kind of feel like, what is it within the peanut that's creating this epidemic? When we were younger, there weren't any rules. When I grew up in the 70s and 80s, there wasn't feed, don't feed, eat peanut butter while you're nursing, don't eat peanut butter while you're nursing. There weren't all of those rules, and right. I didn't know anybody with a peanut allergy as well. But I also do feel like we were told a certain thing, and the medical field made a certain recommendation that as parents we really trusted. And now a new one is coming out and going back and saying, well, we were wrong. Possibly, I understand that, and I appreciate this study.
Mm.
But I do feel like, is it beyond the realm of possibilities 10 years from now that we're sitting here saying, hey, you know what? We got it wrong this time, too.
So that's an interesting question. And actually, we've got some listeners who have the same the questions on their mind. And Dr. Schreffler, let me ask you, this seems to be a rather robust study and a reliable one, but it's just one study so far. So, I mean, how do you address that concern that things could change in the future?
Right. I mean, believe me, when I see sort of public reports of, science and the way that the media covers it and the way that we ourselves, you know, promote it at times, I worry that we'll swing back and forth. And in fact, I think that was part of why, as more and more epidemiology came out pointing toward, you know, probably the benefits of early introduction, there was a lot of caution to sort of swing back too strongly the other direction. And I think there will be, you know, it'll take a little time to sort of process and make good recommendations. However, this does point in the same direction as the epidemiology has been looking for a little while now. This is a well-powered, it's a very large, it's a randomized prospective intervention, meaning, you know, it's much less subject to some of the biases that can occur when you're trying to look at the literature or you're trying to look at these questions, you know, from using epidemiology. And it's much stronger than the evidence that was the basis of the earlier recommendations for avoidance. So, I mean, I think that it does deserve replication. And it also, it's going to be important to generalize this to other foods. Is
right.
it something that we think is unique to peanut, or is it the case that this is true for other things as well? And it's going to need some generalization to, you know, what does it mean for the lower risk infants, and what is enough peanut, and what is the early time point that's critical?
Yeah,
so there's
yeah.
definitely a lot more work to come, and yet it's a big study. I don't think this one study by itself turns everything over, but it does fit in this context of where things have been going.
Well, Dr. Wayne Schreffler is the director of the Food Allergy Center at Massachusetts General Hospital. He's chief of pediatric allergy and immunology at MGH. Dr. Schreffler, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And Aaron Brazil, Boston food allergy activist and mother of a son who has some severe food allergies. Thank you so much for your perspective and for coming in today.
Okay. I also do run a group called No Nuts Moms Group of Boston. So if people do have questions and want to kind of connect with other allergy families, then go on Facebook or Twitter and join those groups.
No Nuts Moms group.
Yeah.
Okay, terrific. Well, thank you for letting us know about that. Listeners, stay with us because coming up, a rapid defense of space savers in Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.